I'm Afshin Ratansi, and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the Middle East, where in Gaza, tens of thousands of men, women and children have been massacred by US, UK, EU armed Israel. The survivors of direct attacks are suffering from disease, need urgent medical treatment and or risk dying from starvation. And with hundreds of thousands of schools, universities, mosques, churches, hospitals and houses destroyed, they have nowhere to go. Joining me now from Chicago is Ali Abu Nima, the founder and director of the Electronic Intifada. He's the author of The Battle for Justice in Palestine. Ali, thanks so much for coming on Going Underground. You know, the Electronic Intifada has been such a resource to so many people for nearly a quarter of a century. Just give me your reaction to NATO's media propaganda campaign celebrating Israel saving of four captives from Gaza recently. I understand the British propaganda network, the BBC, founded in 1922, celebrating it with, you know, it was an Entebbe-like rescue and people were dancing in the streets.
Thank you so much, Afshin. Well, it's utterly grotesque, of course, because they're all downplaying just the sheer atrocities Israel committed, murdering almost 300 Palestinians, injuring almost twice as many. And in fact, killing, according to the Palestinian resistance, three other Israeli captives in the process. So this bloodbath really underscores, contrary to what the BBC or the Israeli government might want us to believe, that the only way to get the Israeli prisoners of war back is to end the war, to end the genocide, to for Israel to agree to what the Americans insist is its own ceasefire proposal, and to address all the other root causes of this horrifying and escalating violence, something that they won't do.
I mean, what do you think goes through these so-called journalists' minds when they hear Biden saying it's an Israeli proposal for peace? Then clearly Blinken is saying things like, well, we have to, Israel has accepted it. I mean, the dissonance is kind of in what he actually says, and then blaming Hamas for coming back late on it. And I mean, was it a Hamas, is it a Hamas resolution, resolutions at the Security Council 2735, more or less, that the United States is promoting?
I mean, to cut through this, I think what's happening is that the so-called Israeli proposal presented by the Americans is actually a watered-down version of the proposal presented by the Americans to Hamas in early May, which Hamas accepted. But it's been watered down to make it vague and to remove the question of a permanent ceasefire, something that Hamas insists is its bottom line. It's not going to back off from that. But ultimately, if you cast your mind back to the beginning of this genocide, Afshin, both the United States and the Israelis said, a ceasefire means Hamas has won and Israel has been defeated. So, which is true, because remember, Israel went in saying, we're going to destroy Hamas militarily and politically and in every other way. And here they are negotiating with Hamas, appealing to Hamas to accept their proposals. So in order to try to spin this as something other than an Israeli defeat, they have to pretend this is a magnanimous proposal from Israel and make it look as if it's Israel's initiative rather than a defeat being imposed on Israel by the resistance. So that's what all of these American contortions are about in the best case. Do the Americans really want a ceasefire? I think they do if it's on Israeli terms. If not, they're willing to let the genocide go on and on, and then all of these diplomatic shenanigans and pretense that you know, this is an Israeli proposal is simply serving to try to cover and absolve both Israel and the United States for continuing this genocide and to blame Hamas for the failure to end it.
I mean, there's no free press in NATO nations, clearly. Are they doing their jobs then well, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the CNN, all these different groupings in terms of trying to cloud this issue so that people don't hear what you just told me?
Yes, of course. They're largely propaganda. They operate as extensions of the governments and the establishment with a veneer of criticism and a veneer of adversarialness at times to try to maintain the image that they are somehow a free press holding power to account. But they only do that at the margins and on inconsequential things. And for the most part, they launder the lies and the propaganda of their governments. We've seen that, glaringly in the case of Gaza, but also in the case of Ukraine and Russia as well.
Yeah, some say that they want to finish with this Gaza situation, the Biden administration, Jake Sullivan and the rest of them, because they want to get on to this targeting of Russia. That's the important one and the one that gets support, because the unprovoked Russian aggression even has that narrative, even has the support of Biden's base, so much as the lies been about the Ukraine conflict.
I'm not sure that it even does have the support of Biden's base. You know, they were successful in manufacturing consent for the proxy war against Russia, which, thanks to the United States, has cost hundreds of thousands of Ukrainian lives in a futile attempt to destroy or curtail Russia. But I think in both cases of Ukraine and Gaza, these have been, yet more horrific American-driven, American-led catastrophes, human catastrophes, and political catastrophes, just like the catastrophes in Iraq, in Afghanistan. And so they see, the people in charge are psychopaths. They have no human feeling, no empathy, no ability to relate to others. They view this entirely through the lens of their own political and misconceived strategic interests. So I think what it is they want to manage it for public relations purposes and for electoral purposes. So in the case of Gaza, if they can get a ceasefire on Israeli and American terms, so be it. If not, they're happy to let the slaughter continue, but then they want to shift the blame for that to Hamas and, for political and electoral reasons, get it off genocide Joe Biden. And when it comes to Ukraine, they know that they're not going to defeat Russia, but they want to sort of keep it going, avoid a total collapse, at least until after the election. And they just don't care how many Ukrainians have to be kidnapped off the streets and sent to the front to die for Jake Sullivan and Joe Biden.
So when Blinken, standing next to the Qatari counterpart, and of course Qatari State TV have been doing such amazing work from Gaza, their journalists in there are illuminating things, and yet Qatari television is a key cheerleader of US policy, the proxy war against Russia through Ukraine, against Venezuela, against Burkina Faso,
against China.
But Blinken, standing next to the Qatari counterpart, saying in grim tones he knows the pain of the Palestinians. You see that as part of the psychopathy.
Yeah, I mean, he caused, he's largely responsible for a lot of the pain. Remember that Antony Blinken personally has signed waivers bypassing Congress in order to speed up weapons deliveries to Israel so that it can have enough of these baby shredder or baby buster bombs to carry out these massacres. So if he knows the pain, it's because he's largely responsible for it.
And of course, his spokespeople saying that's actually a normal process, those waivers. He's not doing anything unusual. Back to electronic intifada. I mean, as, all these people who think the war started on October last year, you've been covering it, as I say, for, more than two decades, maybe a quarter of a century. Regarding this rescue of four captives, and as you said, I mean, as far as we know it, 1,000 killed or wounded Palestinians, What are you information are you getting as regards any American involvement, the peer, the humanitarian peer, whether there were American soldiers, American enabling? I mean, in a sense, does it matter? Because obviously the weapons the Israelis use to behead the children are American and British anyway. But any information?
I think that
the Pentagon, very quick, I should just say, we had nothing to do with this.
Yes. I mean, just to say, there's a lot of sort of swirling supposition or theories and very little firm evidence. I mean, military experts I've talked to, including the Electronic Intifada's John Elmer, say that there would be no real tactical advantage to using the pier. It's this rickety thing that keeps floating away, and it's not as if you can land heavy weapons on it. You can't put a tank on it, for example. It would 60, 70 ton tank. And why would the Israelis need to do that? Because the pier is at the end of something called the Netzarim Corridor, which is this large swath of Gaza that Israel has occupied and tried to turn into a permanent security zone, dividing Gaza from north to south. And Israel has several large military bases in the Netzarim Corridor. So why would they come off the pier when they have these military bases there and they can just drive in from Israel, which is what, in fact, they do? And then we've heard reports that are unverified or unverifiable of U.S. forces taking place. And I think that, you know, hopefully time will tell, we'd be able to get some more firm information than we have now. But I think what you put to me in the second part of your question is really more the point, is that regardless of these tactical details of American involvement, and clearly there was American involvement in terms of, you know, perhaps intelligence or planning.
They've admitted
not
that.
So much boots. Yeah, they've admitted that.
Jake Sullivan.
You're right.
National Security Advisor. Right. We are helping Correct. Israel retrieve the captives.
Correct. So there's probably intelligence, planning, other sorts of information. But the bigger picture is that Israel is, that the United States, rather, excuse me, is the godfather of this genocide. So regardless of whether the pier was involved or whether, you know, U.S. Army Rangers or whatever they're called were involved, which, again, we have no firm evidence of, the Americans are the drivers of this genocide. And that must not be ever forgotten.
Ali Abu Nima, I'll stop you there. More from the founder and director of the Electronic Intifada after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the founder and director of the Electronic Intifada, Ali Abu Nima. Ali, you were actually mentioning in part one your colleague John, who's just recently, I understood, did a detailed report about the fact that it was the Israelis killing their own people on October the 7th. You just want to briefly recap some of that. People can watch that online.
Actually, that report I think you're referring to is by my colleague David Sheen.
And David
since
Sheen.
October 7th, yes, since October 7th, we've done extensive reporting on what happened on October 7th. And again, using largely Israeli sources, which show that contrary to the official narrative and the one spread by Western media propaganda, Israel killed many, if not most, of its own people on October 7th, using, you know, under something called the Hannibal Directive, which is this once secret, now widely known Israeli order that allows the military to use overwhelming force to stop Israelis being taken captive, even if that means killing those Israelis in the process. And the Hannibal procedure was applied widely on October 7th and ordered from the top. That's something we've documented again from Israeli sources. And in addition to that, there was just indiscriminate fire, panic, and chaos as the Israeli Army's Southern Division collapsed under the sophisticated and well-planned military attack by the Palestinian resistance. And what we've also documented since October 7th through very meticulous reporting, again, based largely or almost entirely on Israeli sources, is how to cover up this massive failure and this massive killing of its own citizens, Israel, including Israeli senior military officers like General Barak Hiram and Colonel Golan Vach, who our colleague David Sheen reports on in detail, manufactured atrocity tales, including the tales of burned babies, children being tied together and set on fire, families being murdered at their dinner table, and of course the claims of mass sexual violence on October 7th. The evidence is clear. None of this ever happened. It simply didn't happen. And we document that, but you won't find it on the BBC or CNN or the New York Times, who instead continue to perpetrate and advance these hoaxes. In the case of Barak Hiram, this Israeli general, he actually ordered Israeli tanks to open fire on a house in Kibbutz Be'eri on October 7th, where 15 civilians, Israeli civilians, were being held, killing almost all of them. There were only two survivors who lived to tell the tale, and it's thanks to them, these Israeli survivors, Yasmin Porat and Hadass Dagan, that we know that the Hamas fighters were not abusing or harming the civilians in that house, and that everyone was killed not by the Hamas fighters, but by the Israeli tank fire. And then after that mass Hannibal attack, that mass killing of Israelis by the Israeli army, General Barak Hiram went out and lied and told this completely made up story about how all these people were killed. And we know that these sorts of things happened across the region, across what they call southern Israel on October 7th, but there's been very little truth-telling about it, and there needs to be a full international independent investigation, which unfortunately there doesn't seem to be a lot of support for in Israel.
Yeah. The UN has done one, and I have to say Alan Dershowitz was on this show, said he's seen videos. There was a lot of that. I've seen videos, beheaded babies, burned babies. And then we had a former Israeli justice minister who walked out of the interview here when we talked to him about say sexual violence, which was a keen trope. I know that Electronic Intifada has documented sexual violence by Israelis against Palestinians over many years. In fairness, even the Murdoch Times has belatedly said that these rape claims, systematic rape claims, were false of all newspapers. But of course, by the time the lies are out, in the public imagination, they are out. Britain, the European Union, successfully instituted continental censorship over Nazis and Zelensky and Ukraine. People are banned. It's illegal in Britain to, I think, even repeat a BBC previous reporting about Nazis who are now, I suppose, funded by NATO nations. What are they going to do to people like you, Electronic Intifada, and other groups that are exposing on a daily basis and have been to stop them from showing that these narratives being spread from Israel and their AIPAC election manipulated American politicians are all lies?
Well, they're already doing it, not just to us specifically, but all across the so-called collective West, where we see brutal censorship and repression. I'll just give you one example I'm familiar with personally. In April, I was invited to speak at a conference in Berlin organized by the Palestinian community there, along with Jewish allies in solidarity with Palestine. And I was honored to be invited to speak alongside Dr. Hassan Abu Sitta, the British Palestinian surgeon and the rector of Glasgow University, who spent the first 43 days of this genocide in Gaza, treating people and witnessing atrocities. And what did the German government do? They banned him, a British citizen, from entering Germany. They banned him from most of Europe, the so-called Schengen visa-free travel area. And they even banned him from speaking online to anyone in Germany. The conference itself, I was supposed to speak remotely from the United States. It lasted less than an hour before German police thugs raided it, cut off the electricity, and drove everyone out. And the German press reported that I may well be under a travel ban. I don't know if I am, because I didn't attempt to travel to Germany or the Schengen area. But we see this across...
And this is a surgeon who is saving lives in Gaza.
Yes, and who's going to speak about witnessing genocide, you know, in a Germany which claims to have learned the lessons from history. Instead, what they're doing is banning a doctor who is a witness to genocide from bearing witness to what he saw. And in the United States, we still have First Amendment protections, so the government can't be quite as blatant as the German government in simply banning people and raiding conferences. But instead, what you have is these McCarthyite witch hunts by Congress and by university administrations against students and professors, and journalists and others being fired from their jobs for speaking out or covering this story too honestly.
Yeah, there was one from the Hill I noticed earlier. But then if there are reasons for optimism, actually, because a generation of elite students are never going to forget this, maybe, unless their student loans being paid back mean they have to forget it. What kind of revenge can we expect from those children who are surviving the onslaught of British, American, EU armed bombing in Gaza, in Jerusalem, as we speak now?
I don't think it's a question of revenge. I think that the Palestinian people, like other colonized peoples, have shown remarkable patience and magnanimity towards their oppressors, and remarkably little revenge.
To their detriment, Ali, it has to be said. I interviewed Nelson Mandela in Dubai once, and I wondered why he was giving away so much to neoliberal forces after fighting so long against apartheid there.
Yeah, a fair point. And Palestinians have never sought revenge, certainly not in the way that Israel is now carrying out a revenge genocide and, you know, just unspeakable atrocities just out of... almost for the sheer joy, we see Israeli soldiers posting videos of themselves celebrating this unspeakable violence. It is not revenge that they will get from Palestinians, but it is resistance. They will get resistance until Palestinians are liberated. And resistance is a right. Resistance is something that an oppressor like Israel can expect. And everything Israel has done to the Palestinian people now for eight decades has only strengthened the resistance, and I have no doubt that that will continue.
Yeah, those atrocity videos posted by Israeli occupation forces, I mean, is that just of a kind? I mean, we saw British and American soldiers' use of torture in Afghanistan and Iraq. Right now, as they're detaining thousands of Palestinians while the Gaza genocide continues, is it like Abu Ghraib? What's going on to these Palestinians behind the scenes that even Israeli soldiers aren't posting?
It certainly sounds like it. You know, some of the reports of sexual torture and violence coming out of this Sde Teman torture camp, this concentration camp where Israel is holding thousands of Palestinians incommunicado, are very reminiscent of the horrific torture carried out by American torturers at Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq now 20 years ago. It seems unbelievable to me that it's that long. And I think the difference now is also many people say that this is the first live stream genocide, and that's right. The technology and the availability of, you know, the ubiquity of cameras and video everywhere, even in Gaza, means that these atrocities are being seen in a way that they might not have been seen even 10 years ago, and certainly not 20 years ago. But that said, there is an openness to the glee and celebration of genocidal violence in Israel that I think goes beyond anything we saw during the Iraq War, during apartheid in South Africa. There does seem to be an unhinged extremism among the Israeli public and leadership, which I think stems from largely from the impunity and immunity they've enjoyed because of the support from the United States, the European Union, and the West in general, have sent the message to them for decade after decade, you can do no wrong. No matter what you do to the Palestinians, we'll back you, we'll protect you, we'll support you, we'll arm you. And the Israelis have gotten the message, frankly, that okay, they well, got just, the memo.
Just finally, Ali, yeah, we must remember it's, of course, British, the European Union and the United States enabling any mental illness nationally. Just finally, we're starting to get inklings of people suddenly starting to understand what the electronic intifada has been saying for years, that the two-state solution is not the way forward. Would you say now advocating a two-state solution is akin to supporting genocide almost? I mean, are we out of this two-state solution morass that the electronic intifada has said for so many years is just a way of whitewashing genocide and the breaking of international law and convention since 1945?
Yes, nobody believes it. You know, it's just a talking point to avoid reality. And the reality is that Israel is a genocidal regime that has to go, that has no interest in coexisting with the people whose rights it has usurped for, you know, more than 80 years. And that the last to admit that will be the so-called political leaders and elites. But as you say, the realization is now broader than ever among world publics, including and especially in the West, where just the gap between leaders and public is wider than ever on so many fronts. And that will continue. That awareness will grow.
Ali Abu Nima, thank you.
Thank you, Afshin.
And that's it for the show. Our continued condolences to those bereaved by UK-US EU armed genocide. We'll be back with a brand new episode on Saturday. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media. If it's not censored in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV on rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Saturday.